This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
The Women's Hoop Show, a podcast hosted by me, Jordan Robinson, brings you fresh women's basketball voices and breakdowns every week. I'll be joined by hoop experts all year long. Find the Women's Hoop Show on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to Sports Talk here on the Big 870. Mike Dottiglia along with Charlie Long in studio. We'll take you to 6 o'clock tonight. And we got one right off the bat on our Oakland Heart Jewelers talk and text line. Former Major League Baseball player, double digits, two-time All-Star, two-time World Series champion. And on Baseball Jeopardy, they might have people stumped on this one. He was the American League stolen base leader in 2000, Johnny Damon. Johnny, thanks so much for joining us.
Hey, Mike, thanks for having me. Great to be on the show, and I hope everything's going fantastic with you all. I know you've had the Super Bowl, you have Mardi Gras going on, an incredible time for the people of Louisiana.
Johnny, I ask you right off the bat, because so many people, when they heard the previews you were coming on today, they say, man, what Johnny's doing today? And I knew you were involved with a game, so I'll let you kind of explain what's happening on your end and what you're doing today.
Yeah, so A Game is my company. I'm the, created the drink back in the day. 2012 was a very hot summer, and a couple football players passed. We wanted to come out with a clean hydration drink with no artificial flavors, no artificial coloring. We also have no forever chemicals. We zero dyes, and with the Make America Healthy Again project that's going on, we have Gary Brecken locked in with our team. He knows a thing or two about nutrition, but we also have Tyler Adams, who's going to bring the World Cup with the U.S. team over here next year. We know Caleb Downs won the national championship this year, but we have a clean hydration drink, and it's called A-Game, and you have to bring your A-Game every single moment of every single day, not just being an athlete, but being a teacher, being a parent, being a sports talk host. And so I try to bring my A-Game all the time, and my team is bringing their A-Game, so we're very excited about what's going on. I know we are in Greer's right now. We're also in Ross's. So a lot of good things happening for us in the state of Louisiana, and working with Governor Landry. He's been incredible to our growth, and can't thank the state of Louisiana for trying out our product. And let's bring it home. And I'm happy the LSU Tigers baseball team is strong again, because, man, they are so good. They have so much depth, and we know they bring their A game every single year. So I've been a big fan of theirs since I was a kid.
Johnny, I saw a couple of vans with the A game on it. I was just telling Di Newman this during the parade route they were passing. So I know it's local here, and I know you guys were in full force for the Super Bowl week. And you talk about LSU and what they've been able to do there. I'm going to ask a question. I asked Kurt Schilling a few weeks back when we had Kurt on, and he flipped it back to me about what was the motivation in life for you to be a baseball player. And I flipped it. Man, to me, it was fear. I didn't want to fail at what I did in life. I didn't. And so fear was a failure was a big part of motivation for me. And Kurt laughed. He's like, Mike, I would have told you the exact same thing for me. I didn't want to fail as a baseball player. So what was the big kind of push for you, motivation for you as a baseball player?
Oh, my motivation was to always be my best, and my motivation was to be a champion. I understand baseball is a failure sport, so I understood that my worst swing can turn into a bases clearing blooper down the third baseline, and my best swing that I could ever take in my life could be a line drive to the second baseman for an out. So I understand the ups and downs of the game, and I'm hoping we get the next generation of kids involved with baseball, because a lot of kids don't like to fail. No one likes to fail, but it teaches you how to pick yourself up and get going again and learn how to deal with some bad things. Bad things are always going to happen in life, but you got to be able to pick yourself up and do the very best you can to be at the best place you can possibly be.
Johnny, it's a two-part question. One, you won that Red Sox team, and you know that curse was there. And y'all had nothing to do with it, but everybody brought it up. Hadn't won a World Series since 1918. What happened with Ruth? Man, y'all not the, you know, y'all weren't part of the group that sold Ruth to the Yankees. But what was that feeling like to finally get that kind of off you guys' backs in Boston? The second part is, to leave Boston when you couldn't come to terms with the team is one thing, but you leaving to sign with the Yankees, I know one thing, man, you were loved in Boston, but as soon as you signed up there and you were a Yankee, that wasn't too good in a lot of people's minds. So that thought of winning that World Series with Boston and finally 86 years and finally the curse was over.
Yeah, winning that World Series in Boston was so incredible. I mean, we brought a nation together, Red Sox Nation. We reversed the curse. We made so many people so happy. And the stories that you hear just over time and how family members could not possibly believe that we would ever have won a championship. So, I mean, all the stories are heart-wrenching. I'm glad that I was a part of it. I'm glad that I have a family of teammates that are forever going to enjoy 2004 forever. I mean, it's just absolutely amazing. And then, you know, a year later, I end up signing with the Yankees. Yeah, I wanted to stay with the Red Sox. I knew I was a fan favorite. And after we won the World Series, I was told, buy a house. You're going to be here for a long time. Contract's going to get to you soon. So I buy a house, and then no contract. I play another season. I'm a free agent. Red Sox aren't even talking to me. I start talking to some other teams. Talk to the Yankees. Agreed to a number. I took it back to the Red Sox and was like, I know you can't come this high, but can you at least show me that you may want to keep me? And, you know, they thought I was bluffing. You know, I love the Red Sox. I love the ownership for giving me that four-year opportunity. But when there's no contract and when you have Jacoby Ellsbury time in the big leagues happening real soon, I have to make a move. And, you know, unfortunately, it was not a happy one for Red Sox fans, but I mean, I think now they know, like, I never wanted to leave Boston, but if I were to, putting the pinstripes on, being part of that tradition, and I'm just glad it worked out for both sides. So I can honestly say I've been loved and hated everywhere. So, you know, whether it's my politics, whether it's the Yankee, Red Sox, whatever it is, I've been loved and hated for so many things in my life, and I'm okay with it. Baseball got me ready for it, you know? You got to pick yourself up. There's a lot of ups and downs in life. I'm good, so I'm a happy camper.
That's pretty good. Johnny, getting back to your high school days, not only were you a really great baseball player, but you ran the sprints, and I was told you played football for a little while, and you got hit by a guy that went on to play in the National Football League that was pretty good. So it goes to show, I think today we such a specialty world where you just play baseball, just play basketball, just play football. But back then it was a different story. Track season, you ran track, you played basketball in basketball season, baseball in baseball season, you played football in football season. But you were a track sprinter, and on the football field, you got hit by Warren Sapp.
Yes, that is correct. And, yeah, he rung my bell for sure, but we we won the battle 6-3 that second field goal. So, but yeah, Warren had a tremendous career, and I'm happy for him. Central Florida boys stick together. But if you ever have Warren Sapp on, I still have to figure out what a blue darter is. I believe it's a bird, but we don't get to see too many of them around here. But Warren had a great career. But I think the kids, it's great. That was the way we stayed out of trouble, was to play football.
Yeah.
Then you carry it on to either basketball or soccer, and then baseball and track ran together. But, I mean, our parents did not want us at home until the lights came up. And they didn't want you to bring your friends at home to eat up all your food. So our parents were like, go out, have fun. It was a safer world at the time as well. But, yeah, we were outside all day long until the sun went down. And I think we were a lot better and happier as kids. And that's my thing. I've got to get the kids outside running around, because I can't get lazy on an iPad. It's frustrating.
I agree.
Johnny, I want to preview a little bit of the 2025 MLB season with you. But first, you mentioned LSU baseball. A former LSU Tigers lighting up the MLB right now, and that's Paul Skeens. I mean, he made his debut in May last year, and he just set the world on fire. He was fantastic in his rookie campaign with the Pittsburgh Pirates, ends up winning the Rookie of the Year. It's a first-time All-Star, first-team All-MLB. I want to get your thoughts, and just this is just a fun question. What would be your plate approach going against someone like Paul Skeens that is so elite on the mound?
Man, what a great start to his career, and many, many more great things coming from him. My approach to Paul Skeens, I mean, I wish I were a lot younger, but it would try to get a strike. I mean, he throws so many pitches at different angles, and he shows a lot of confidence on that mound. So my biggest thing is to have some confidence at the plate if somehow you can, and be ready for that strike, because it's tough hitting balls, especially off a guy who pitches as great as he does. And he's doing very good, man. I mean, LSU, Paul Skeens, Olivia Wilde. I mean, wow, what a great power couple. And congratulations to both of them, and continued success
to Dylan
LSU.
Cruz and what he's going to do in the
1-2 punch. Ooh, that LSU had,
man,
was pretty special.
That was awesome.
Well, Dylan Cruz is my boy. Like, his dad worked at the Magic Arena back in the day, so I bumped into his dad a couple of days ago. So they're Florida boys, they're Orlando folks. So yeah, Dylan Cruz is a badass, and I'm happy with his progress right now, and hopefully he has a tremendous and long career.
And then, Johnny, I wanted to get your thoughts. I'm a huge Astros fan. I don't make it any secret on here. Another former LSU Tiger, funny enough, Alex Bregman, was part of the golden age run for the Houston Astros, but now he's in Boston. He signed that major contract with them in this offseason. You know, we kind of saw the writing was on the wall when he turned down, I think it was like the 6-year 156 from Houston. He ends up going with the Red Sox. I wanted to get your thoughts on that move, because I think it was one of the biggest splashes of this offseason.
Oh, it's definitely a huge splash, and unfortunately the numbers didn't work out with Houston. I would have thought, you know, saving money on taxes and playing in better weather year-round, but of course I love Boston, and of course I know what he's going to bring to the Red Sox is a winning attitude. And before they signed Bregman, I thought maybe they'll win like 77 games, but after, I think they're up to 87 games, because they're going to – he's going to make the players around him a lot better, and that's just the way he plays. It's always difficult to see, you know, a franchise guy leave their team. Unfortunately, I get it. It's happened to me a number of times. It's I never wanted to leave any of my teams, whether it were the Royals, Red Sox, or Yankees. I always wanted to come back, but teams start talking to their scouts and try to figure out what's best for the team for the future, and I totally get it. But as you can see, it hasn't been the best for the Yankees yet, since they haven't won a World Series since, you know, they let me go.
Johnny, thinking about it, the way it is today, none of the major league teams want to do revenue sharing. I know if I'm the Dodgers or the Yankees or the Red Sox, I don't want to do no revenue sharing with the other clubs. But what's happening out in L.A. with the Dodgers? there's no price that's sort of too high for them. I'm going to make it. What's your thoughts on how they have used free agency? And they do have the farm system, but they've really used free agency a lot to build that team. And they're a juggernaut team. They've only got one World Series to show for it over the last few years. But, man, are they stockpiling players?
Yeah, they sure are. And, you know, unless there's rules against it, I mean, they're abiding by every baseball rule. The owner wants the best players. And whenever someone comes out on the market, he's going to give a nice run to them. And I know Dave Roberts got to be very happy with what he has to deal with on a year-to-year basis. He's going to continue to have the best players, and they're going to continue to win and compete for not just a playoff spot. I think they have their playoff spot locked down already. But winning World Series, I mean, it's you've got to play the games. It's always tough in the playoffs, but their owner has given them plenty of great talent to repeat as champions.
And, Johnny, before we let you run, I want to get your thoughts. Every single season, there feels like there's one team that kind of surprises and comes out of nowhere to make the postseason. I think last year was kind of like Detroit, right? And for me, and I want to get your thoughts specifically on this team, the Cincinnati Reds really kind of made an under-the-radar signing with bringing in someone that you're very familiar with in Terry Francona, Tito. You know, he won the World Series with Boston with you in 2004. Now he goes to the Cincinnati Reds, who have a very young, talented core. Just want to get your thoughts on that fit, and if the Reds can be one of those surprise teams in 2025.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, what a great pick for a manager. He knows what he's doing. He knows how to get the players ready to go on a nightly basis, and just that leadership. And he also has Brad Mills with him. I mean, his bench coach forever. I think they're going to be a big surprise, and I really don't think the NL Central is someone's got to go take it. It's not up for anybody right now. There's a few teams that are lacking some star power right now, but, you know, stars are made overnight sometimes, so we'll see what happens.
Johnny, thanks so much for joining us this afternoon. Man, listen, best of luck with A Game, and I see it all over now, so I know it's out there, and I know you have a lot of success with the drink.
Well, please go out there and try it, and let your listeners know what you think about it. It'd be a great thing for me and a great thing for my A-game team. So I appreciate you guys and your time.
Thanks, Johnny.
Thanks so much, Johnny. Really appreciate it. Two-time Major League Baseball champion. Did it with the Red Sox and Yankees.
Pretty interesting career,
That little swerve, Johnny Damon. We'll be back with more Sports Talk here on the Big 870 right after this break. Back here on Sports Talk on the Big 870, Mike Dottiglio along with Charlie Long. Remember tomorrow, join the crew of WWL for wall-to-wall coverage of the greatest free show on earth. The parades in New Orleans are rolling an hour early. So are we. We'll broadcast live from New Orleans and Company on St. Charles Avenue in the heart of the party. The fun starts at 7 a.m., not 8, but at 7, with Tommy Tucker and Linda Cassidy. Then they followed at 9:30 by Newell Norman, Ashley O, and Scoot's going to be on the roving mic. Catch real-time coverage of Zulu and Rex and all the sights, sounds, and excitement of Mardi Gras, 7 a.m. till 1, and maybe a little bit beyond that. Brought to you by our amazing sponsors, Bromart, Home Bank, Logo Express, Lamarck Ford, and our presenting sponsor, LCMC Health. Keeping you well this Mardi Gras season right here on the Big 870. When we get back, we'll have on with us Adam West, co-host of Saints Block Party Podcast, talking NFL Combine, who looked good out in Indy, right after this break here on the Big 870. Back here on Sports Talk on the Big 870, Mike Dottiglio along with Charlie Long in studio and on our Oakwood Heart Jewelers talking text line, back from Indianapolis, co-host of the Saints Block Party Podcast, Adam West. Adam, thanks so much for joining me this afternoon.
Mike, it's an honor. It's a pleasure. You invited me on. Thank you so much. still get my legs underneath me coming back from Indy. It was a very busy week being at the Combine. But let's talk Combine. Let's talk Saints.
All right, Adam. I talked to a couple friends of mine that did the personal interviews with the teams. And all three of them came away with one guy. They said, boy, was he impressive in the one-on-ones with the teams. And that was Tyler Booker, the offensive guard from Alabama. How he came across, how he loved the game. Two of the three did not scout the SEC, so that deal was, man, he's a lot bigger than I thought he was, and he can move for a big guy. He also did a little bit of work for him, a little extra work at the center position. You didn't get an opportunity to get those interviews, but who impressed you in the interview sessions that the players had with the media? Because as much as what you did out on that, jumping and lifting and everything else, which don't tell you a damn thing about if you can play ball or not, those interview sessions, teams pay a lot of attention to. But who caught your eye as somebody, man, that guy really impressed me, or a couple guys like that?
Right off the bat, Georgia's Jalen Walker, just a captivating personality. You know, his tape aside, just an engaging young man. And it's funny because if you watch him play his tape, his personality, you can tell, like, he puts the switch on when he goes on Saturday when playing for Georgia. Just called himself a test piece on the football field, because I asked him what his favorite position is, because people don't know if he's going to play edge. People don't know if he's going to play off the ball linebacker. He said he's a chess piece. He's a football player. He likes that the opposing offense doesn't know where he's going to be. I lit up when talking to him at the podiums. Another player that really I got really engaged with, JTT, the edge rusher from Ohio State. We know the Saints have really kind of tied to that pipeline edge rusher with Jeff Ireland at the helm with college scouting, with all the Ohio State pipeline. The JTT, the Ohio State edge rusher, was also very, very engaging. He's not a player that I would see them maybe, getting in the first round, but he's someone at pick 40 or in the second round, if he were there, if they didn't go edge rush in the first round. Also someone very engaging, very captivating, that really was just an engaging individual young man that really, personality-wise, I could see how, going way back to 2014, I could see how Sean Payton fell in love with the Brandon Cooks at the Combine. And like, Sean Payton fell in love with them then, and they didn't meet with Brandon Cooks the rest of the entire draft process, and they traded up to drafted them. Being there, talking to these young prospects at a very short period of time, you see how these coaches fall in love with players with their interactions with them, meeting with them one-on-one.
Yeah, people say, oh, it's best man on the board. No, a lot of times the head coach gets involved. Man, I don't care what y'all got on that board. This is who I want. And they got some head coaches in this league, Adam, man. When they kind of hit the gavel, everybody listens, and Sean was one of those guys. You talked about Jalen Walker, and he was a favorite of mine. And I told this to Charlie when we did the mock draft. I had him penciled in before I did it, Saints. And then I got him going to Carolina right ahead, because I think in the 3-4 alignment, he would be a really good fit piece as an off-ball 3-4 edge rusher. When I look at the positions, we've talked a little bit about certainly tight end, got a lot of guys there. Defensive linemen, 24 of my top 75 are defensive linemen. But I think the most underrated spot, running back. And it's sort of devalued to a certain extent, and still is. No matter if the Eagles won the Super Bowl or not, I think it's still devalued. And Ashton Jeanty, he'll be a top 10 pick. Somebody in that top 10 is going to pull the trigger on Ashton one way or another. I think it's what's going to happen afterwards, and it is a really deep crop of running backs. Is there a player or two? May not necessarily have to be a second-round pick or a third-round pick, but a guy in the middle of the draft you think could really help out this football team?
I feel like I'm Jeff Ireland talking right now, but the Ohio State even though the Ohio State running backs, I'm a little more prone to Judkins. He's a little bigger. I also like Henderson as well, but I like Judkins. He's bigger. He's dynamic. One of my players I love the most in this draft, I would say my draft crushes, is the Texas running back, Blue. He to me is AK or Kamara in his prime, but with a jetpack, or very similar to Jahmyr Gibbs, that the Lions drafted 12 overall, and we've seen what he's been able to do in Detroit. He has a fumbling issue, but he ran sub, you know, he ran a 4.3 at the combine, and I just love him as a player. We'll see if Jesse goes top 10. I think he should. I think he's one of the best players in the draft. I think he should easily go top 10. I've heard that this is such an insanely deep running back class. One of the deepest running back classes we've ever seen. My co-host Ryan Wolf loves RJ Harvey. We are able to talk to him at the Senior Bowl. He's extremely dynamic in his own right. It's kind of like this running back class is pick your, like, it's like ice cream. Mike, like, yeah. Which flavor do you like? Yeah. Like, whichever one, it's going to be hard to pick the wrong one. And AK is getting older. Miller has not been able to stay healthy. So the Saints, we've talked about this on our show, they should really come out of this draft with two running backs, honestly.
Amen to that. I agree with you. The thing about RJ, it strikes me because he was a high school quarterback, in Florida. And I get sent all kind of tape because a school is recruiting him, but as a wide receiver. They were going to do to him what they did Trey Harris when he came out of high school here in Louisiana. They were going to move him from quarterback to receiver. He didn't want to play receiver. His deal was either play quarterback or play running back. He made the good choice. He played running back, even though he played a little bit of quarterback at Virginia. The guy for me is Woody Marks. From USC. Man,
I'm in Los Angeles, and I've seen a lot of Woody Marks. He's a spark plug.
He is a guy that can run with speed, with power, and he catches the ball so smoothly coming out of the backfield. So for me, if I'm looking at maybe as a late third round selection, Woody Marks would be it. And he has a lot of similarities. I'm not trying to compare him, but similarities to Alvin Kamara and what he can do on the field.
I'm going to give you another draft crush that I think that the Saints could potentially get round five, round six, that he's not getting a lot of publicity. And this, I went to Texas Tech for a couple of years. I was born and raised in Lubbock, Texas. Todd Brooks.
Yep.
I love Todd. I think he's a workhorse. He has a little Le'Veon Bell to his game. In terms of his patience, and he could be that kind of that workhorse back. And he does have, like, he has speed. He's a good player. I don't think he's going to go very high. But if you want a later round back, I'm talking round five, round six, I love Todd Brooks from Texas Tech.
And he's got some versatility. You know, he can sort of kind of play across the board. Hold on a second, Adam. Charlie has a
real
question
quick,
for you.
Yeah, I wanted to hop in before we let you run, Adam. You know, Mike and I always say build through the strengths of the draft, and Mike already mentioned defensive line and running back, but it also feels like a pretty solid tight end class. You know, now I'm not saying we'll see what happens there with Tyler Warren, who Mike had mocked to the Saints at pick 9 initially, but also other guys like Colson Loveland from Michigan. Mike's a real big fan of Mason Taylor from LSU.
It is close between Colson and Tyler Warren. A lot of people didn't believe me when I first said it. It is tight between those two guys.
But, Adam, I wanted to get your thoughts on the tight end class just in general. You know, if the Saints should take one, because it seems like a position that they've kind of avoided for years now.
This tight end class is just like the running back class. I think it might be one of the deepest tight end classes, like, historically all time, and just how talented and deep it is. I just like I said with the running back class, the Saints should try to find themselves taking two tight ends in this draft class. I can say I've heard that the Saints do really like Tyler Warren. That has come out a lot the last couple of weeks. I don't know if it's enough that they take him at 9. I do know they really like Tetaroa, McMillan as well. So that's going to be a very interesting debate come April, come next month, if they're both on the board, because I think they probably both will be. The way I would see is that I don't love Warren as much as a lot of other people do. I think I feel he's more of like a lower first round pick. I love Mason Taylor. I feel like Mason, and this, I'm not an LSU fan. I want to put that out there. So this is not an LSU thing. This is not a homer thing. But I feel like Mason Taylor could fit Kellen Moore's offense just like Tyler Warren could, and you could probably potentially get him at 40 and go a different position at 9. But there's you have Colson Loveland, you have Gunter Helm from Texas, you have we talked to Bowling Green, I'm blanking on his name, Aaron Fanning from there are so many different players at the tight end position in this draft that you can get one, you can get two. And one thing about Kellen Moore's offense, and I kind of studied it when he became head coach and even beforehand, he runs a lot of 12 personnel, run running back, two tight ends. That gives a lot of scheme versatility of, is it going to be a pass? Is it going to be a run? And so he needs two good tight ends to really run what he wants to do. And I've heard that the Saints really want to add tight end to this team. So I do think they're going to really address it in the offseason.
Last question for you, Adam. There's always a player that drops that we think will go a little bit higher. Last year, Charlie and I talked about this. Depending on how the quarterbacks peeled off, it would be Brock Bowers. Sure as hell. Brock falls a little bit out of there.
Don't remind me, Mike. We were one pick away. They were going to draft him. If him and Fuwagwa were both on the board, they were going to
Yeah. So give me a guy, Adam, that you think that might be there at 9 that people aren't maybe saying he'll be there at 9. And would Shedeur Sanders be that guy?
Ooh. You're – okay. I'll give you two players for your first player question. I'm going to go Will Johnson, and I'm going to go Mason Graham. The Will Johnson thing, I'm just going to go with. It's really going to depend on what he runs at his pro day. He's a bigger corner, and I heard this on the floor at the combine. Michigan is not going to put a glowing endorsement out for Will Graham, for Will Johnson, just in regards to how he kind of quote unquote quit on the team, whatever. His 40 time is going to be really important in terms of what his draft stock is going to be. I know the Saints really like him as a player. He might fall very similar to how Marshawn Lattimore fell.
I agree.
In that draft. So that's one player. Shedeur Sanders. If the Raiders don't get a veteran quarterback, whether that's a Sam Darnold or whoever in free agency, and he gets past 6, I think there's a chance that Shedeur could be there at 9.
Well, that would make things real interesting draft night when it would come to the 9th pick. Adam, hey, thanks so much for joining us. Man, listen, it's the first time you've come on with us, but I can assure you it won't be the last.
Yes, sir.
I appreciate you coming on with us. Great stuff.
Thank you, Mike. Really appreciate it, man. You have a good one.
All righty. Adam West does a great job covering the Saints for the Saints Block Party Podcast out in Los Angeles. And got a good beat on what's happening at the NFL Combine. We'll be back to finish it off here in hour number one right after this break on the Big 870 WWL. Finishing up here, hour number one of Sports Talk on the Big 870. I want to thank Johnny Damon, former Major League Baseball guy. Man, he was terrific with us. And also Adam West did a great job. He's co-host of the Saints Block Party Podcast. He was at the NFL Combine. When we come back at 5:20, Blake Ruffino will join us from Are You Serious Network, talking about the Tigers looking for a new D-line coach and also baseball right after this break here on the Big 870 WWL. Welcome back to Sports Talk here on the Big 870. Mike Dettelier along with Charlie Long. We finish it up at 6 o'clock tonight. And Charlie, over the weekend, it's not official, but it's officially official when the season comes to fruition, that the 49ers traded veteran wide receiver Deebo Samuel to the Washington Commanders in exchange for a fifth-round pick. The Commanders acquired. It's a rental deal now. He's got 1 year left on his contract for $17.5 million, and it's a $31 million cap hit to the 49ers. But this tells me they are all in to try to catch the Eagles. I think they are kind of pushing and shoving money in the middle to say, we're going to go out and get a few veteran players. We got the right quarterback. Let's get Deebo Samuel doesn't have to be the 2023 Deebo Samuel. He's gotten nicked up a bit, but, man, to add him to the arsenal along with Terry McLaurin, that running game, Jaden Daniels, and then add some pieces via the draft. And there are also reports it looks as though the Eagles are going to cut loose Darius Slay, and big play Slay may come out on the market. And who I heard is the first team on the phone with him? Commanders.
I don't want to say they're like a retirement home necessarily, but they are getting a lot of veterans on that team, Mike. And it's going to be interesting to see what they decide to do in the draft. I know that, you know, when Myles Garrett requested out and you were thinking of the teams that could be a good fit for him, the Commanders were one of those that kind of came to mind. Like Detroit, obviously, too. But Washington, I think, would be a great fit for him. They need edge help. I'm interested to see what they decide to do with the rest of the offseason, because they do have more cap space to use. That's part of the reason why they were able to make a trade for Deebo Samuels, because they can pay him, and they can pay that contract that he has. So I like the move a lot for him. I do think that they still have options with the 29th overall pick if they keep it instead of potentially making a move for like a Myles Garrett. I think that, you know, if the back end of the first round, maybe you could be targeting another weapon in the passing attack for Jaden Daniels. Offensive line, potentially, depending on how the board falls, or defensive line, because it's just a stacked position for the 2025 draft.
So, I did hear that one of the interviews that went really well was Mason Taylor and the Commanders.
Yeah, you've been preaching that Mason's going to go in the back end of the first round.
Don't be surprised.
Yeah, but I would like the fit, too. I mean, Ertz isn't getting any younger. They kind of need I would love if Colston Loveland somehow fell to them at pick 29. I don't think it's going to happen.
No.
I had him going to Denver in my first mock at pick 20. That feels like a nice fit. But Colston Loveland's going to go middle of the first round. I don't think he's going to fall late first round.
Charlie, I'll be honest. I don't think he gets out of the teens.
Yeah, I don't think so either. Colts
might be a team.
The Colts? Yeah, the Colts, if Tyler Warren isn't there, yeah, for sure, because they need upgraded tight end too. Mason Taylor to the Commanders, though, I mean,
it went well. That's all I can tell you.
When you have the star quarterback on a rookie deal, it's the biggest advantage of anyone in the NFL. And so they just need to find a way to build around Jaden. Obviously, they made it to the NFC Championship game this past year. They weren't on Philadelphia's level, and Philadelphia showed that. But they could make some moves to kind of shorten the gap, so to speak, Mike. I think Deebo's a good start, but I'm really intrigued to see what they do, you know, once free agency hits, because they still have a lot of money to spend, and then also the draft. And if they decide to keep their picks, maybe make a move for another star player, and if they keep their picks, what they end up doing with it.
Yeah, we're going to have to get Kelsey Nicole on and have him break down. Kelsey does a great job with that. Also, too, I know the quarterback knows Mason Taylor pretty well, too. So there is that connection with that. Charlie, today, and it's no surprise, we kind of saw it toward the end of one of the Fox broadcasts, but Jimmy Johnson made it official today, 31 years on the Fox network. And, you know, it was a staple for so many people watching pregame that you saw Jimmy on there with Terry and Howie, and now they've added Mike Strahan to the mix and Gronk to it also. But 31 years, 81 years old, man, I can remember Jimmy Johnson and how shocking it was that it was Miami of Florida reaching out to him to be the guy to succeed Howard Schnellenberger. That was not the choice of the president of Miami, not the choice of a lot of people on the board of supervisors, but the athletic director was, he's my guy. And he's going to win big. And did he win? And then we saw that, what he did to that Miami of Florida program, which was already a really good program with Howard Schnellenberger. And then he goes to Dallas. And one of the what-ifs of this world, had the Eagles been able to get along, back-to-back Super Bowl titles, and, man, they could have had an unbelievable run. Had Jerry, been able to put his ego aside and accept what Jimmy Johnson did. Great run with the Cowboys. But, man, what he did on television, too. He was so insightful, and he brought you a piece of the game from a coach's standpoint that you don't hear a lot.
No, and, Mike, I mean, we talked a little bit about it off air. Like, the NBA's got the NBA on TNT, right, with Shaq, Chuck, Kenny, EJ, and that's the best show for basketball fans. For me growing up, the best show for football fans was Fox NFL Sunday. And I mean, it still is fantastic. And all I'm saying is congrats to Jimmy on a great broadcasting career post his great coaching career. But Jimmy, Terry, Howie, Michael, like, that was much watched TV growing up as a kid and a young football fan. So sad to see him go, but I understand, you know, you're getting up there and you're going to enjoy the retired life, so to speak.
Yeah, and the fish in South Florida will see him a lot more on the water than they had in the past. When we come back, we'll have on with us from the Are You Serious Network, Blake Ruffino, who covers LSU. We'll talk about the series sweep by the Tigers and also their search for a new defensive line coach right after this break here on the Big 870 WWL. Back here on Sports Talk on the Big 870, Mike Dettelia along with Charlie Long, and on our Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text line from the Are You Serious Network, Blake Ruffino. Blake does a great job with us each and every time he's on covering the LSU beat. Blake, thanks so much for joining us. How much Mardi Gras on you did this weekend?
I did a kindergarten parade, Mike, and even that pooped me out more than any endemic party.
Oh, Blake. We got to get you back in that shape for that Mardi Gras, brother. Blake, we'll try.
It's not for a lack of trying. But,
I get it. we will start with the football first about the defensive line coaching opening. And we had on, you know, Coach Jenkins last week, and he explained how difficult it was for Bo Davis to leave LSU to go to the Saints. And it was a week-long decision, is what Coach Jenkins told us. And that particular deal, now that there's an opening there, I kind of knew where they would go first with Coach Chapman, who sort of is a connect the dots. He's coached at LSU. He'd coach at Tulane now. He's at University of Florida. He's a Pete Jenkins protege, which they got a lot of them out there, but didn't get him. So where does this search turn now?
Yeah, Mike, and I think that you're going to hear something probably within the next, I would just say for happenstance, 24 hours, that Randall Joyner at Ole Miss is going to get an extension. I don't think that extension comes on or without what, you know, this decision by Bo Davis and LSU. You know, Mike, I do think that Eric Henderson's name has been thrown around there a lot. I just don't know if that's going to happen. Unless LSU just gets in a place where they got to, you know, really start making some moves here. Mike, I got to be honest with you. I really don't know. I mean, like, normally there's some conversations that are had out there about where they go. Now, I do, like you said, the Pete Jenkins route is arguably going to be something that they do. But, Mike, I really don't know where they go. I think Chapman was clearly the guy that they wanted to go after, but that didn't work. But I do think that Eric Henderson, I do think they're going to circle back. But I just don't know. Now, Alfred, Big Al, as he's called in Missouri, their D-line coach, being with Peoples and Davis, it would be interesting. But, you know, talking to some people around Mizzou, they gave him a massive extension when Blake came the first time because that's who they didn't want to lose the most. So I really just don't know. You know, I just don't know where they go here at this late of date. So I guess we'll buckle up and see.
Yeah, one of the things, Blake, is they have to get this right. That has been a revolving door of coaches. And listen, if you leave here to go and get a better job, I'm all for it. You got to do what's best for you, if it's family-wise, financially, whatever. But this has been the fastest revolving door position on this staff along the defensive line. And in talking to a few of the defensive linemen before Bo came in, that gap of what they were being coached and what they were not being coached was huge. They got to get a guy here, one that can recruit, and two, that can be a good technical coach. Because I think that that was lacking for a while at LSU, and you saw it in their play out on the field.
Mike, I 1,000% agree with you, especially when it comes to the consistency part of it too, right? I mean, listen, regardless if you consider edge, D-line or not D-line, it doesn't matter. I'm going to consider it as such. This is going to be a total of seven defensive linemen on the edge or the interior that Brian Kelly's had at LSU. Mike, he hadn't been through this for 4 years. He hadn't gone through four seasons at LSU.
Yep.
Right? Now, I mean, Mike, I'm just going to say it like I see it. This has been their biggest problem under Brian Kelly. Because if you look at the SEC losses, LSU is allowing, giving up 257.88 yards per game per SEC loss. Now, listen, I went to public school in Franklinton, and I know that my math is not off on this one because I did it, but I'm not great at math. But I know one thing, that's not good. And, Mike, it starts up front in this league. It always has and it always will. They got to be better along their defensive line. The revolving door is what's getting you beat in these big high-profile games, Mike. It's not just the defensive line, but in these games that you're losing too, what's the other big issue? Well, you can't run the football if it's not Jaden Daniels. So I think both of those situations have been a massive problem since he's been here. They got to find consistency, Mike, and they got to find it quick. And by the way, I'm just going to throw this out there. With this hire, I don't think that the defensive linemen in that room, right now are happy at all. You know, if you're Sadir Mitchell, how do you feel right now? And people are like, oh, whatever. No, whatever. He came to Bo Davis twice and he left him twice. So, Mike, they're trying to move quick because they understand what's – everybody's saying they're moving because of spring. That's malarkey. They're moving because they don't want that room to fall apart and have to go through the same thing that they did a couple of years ago.
Kind of switching gears a little bit here. You know, I just want to bring this up with you, Blake, about Cason Evans was named the SEC co-freshman of the week in college baseball, and I want to get your thoughts on how Jay's used him so far. I remember watching the game against Dallas Baptist, and, you know, LSU had a commanding lead in that matchup, but then when things start to get a little bit suspect late, a couple walks, put some runners on base, the first thing Jay does, throw the freshman out there, throw Cason Evans out there, two hitless innings, gets out of a jam, and he earns a save. And then against Kansas State, once again, things are a little bit hazy. Who does he rely on late? The freshman Cason Evans. I think that's kind of a sign early on this season that, you know, this LSU bullpen we've talked about has so much talent. But one guy that's really making a name for himself early on, this Cason Evans kid, it feels like he could be a closer for this team in 2025.
Without a doubt, Charlie. Here's the good thing, too. Against Kansas State, the relay that was hurting around the world, that's what we're going to call it here, okay? He relies on his defense. I think what the bullpen has done better than anything, look at the strikeouts to contact, okay? They're picking the contact, which is getting these quick outs. But I think with Cason Evans, I think he's a little green. So then he's not really worried about it, and he's just doing what he does, right? And it's benefited him. But, man, I mean, listen, he's relying on his stuff. I mean, the 0-2 fastball up and in, the two-seam for the strikeout against DBU. I mean, you see upperclassmen. You see that with schemes. You see that with upper guys that have stuff. This guy's got more confidence than anybody, Charlie, and I think that, to your point, it's not just Jay having confidence in him. I think that he's got confidence in himself, which then breeds down to everybody else.
Yeah, Jay's a creature of habit. I mean, just looking at his start, 8 innings pitched this season, 2 walks to 14 strikeouts.
That's remarkable.
He's been awesome. And then I also wanted to bring this up with you as well, Blake. The midweek pitching staff with, you know, Connor Ware has really kind of been locking down early on. I know that William Schmidt also got his first start this past week in the midweek, and he'll probably get another midweek start this week since they have 2 games against North Dakota State. But it just kind of shows you how deep this pitching staff is when you have a guy like Ware, who Jay praised all throughout the offseason as one of the best pitchers on the staff, starting the midweek games. And then you have Zach Cowan, who was the Wofford ace last year on a team that made the tournament, coming out of the bullpen right behind him, given a different look. You know, you have the tall lefty and kind of the shorter righty. But, you know, these two guys in midweek games have just been locked down early on, and you kind of anticipate that for the rest of the season.
You do. You know, what's going to be interesting with in this situation with Connor Ware is, because he's doing so good in the midweek, you know, if, and I'm not saying that they got rocked or anything, but I mean, if he keeps dominating like he does, is there a situation where the rotation, you know, gets moved around a little bit? We haven't seen it yet, or there's no real reason to see it yet, but you're not in SEC play yet. How does he do in that situation? You know, another thing too, what I think is going to be interesting, Charlie, do you move him out of the midweek?
Right.
Right. I mean, because once you get into SEC play, going with all due respect to Nichols and my alma mater, Southeastern, Connor Ware ain't going to be pitching against them now. You know what I mean? So it's going to be interesting to see, you know, with the in these next 2 weeks before you really get going, how they go there. And then the second question behind that is, what do you do with William Schmidt? Right? Like, I mean, I both of them, I think that you got quality guys there. And then, you know, you've kind of been a little rocky in some of these starts, but then I say that, and then Anthony Ianson comes in there and strikes out 7 of the last 8 guys that he sees. So it was rocky to start, but then I just feel like that this team, maybe it's just me early, they feel like they've been there before, if that makes sense. Like, even though there's so many new guys, even with the arms and the bullpen and everything that they're doing, they feel like they've been there. They never feel like they're out of it. And that's something that I've kind of noticed early, especially with the guys coming out of the pen too.
Blake, I'll swing it back to football. As spring is, I mean, it's right on top of us, the practice sessions. And I think there'll be certainly a lot of look at this cornerback position, and certainly because who you got back there, who you were able to bring in the recruiting process. But I think the area I would keep a real close eye on is offensive line. Because now you've lost 4 of your 5 starters up front. And you're always going to lose a couple guys because of an injury or two. So it's building talent and talent depth. And always think you got to play to your strength. Well, your strength's Garrett Nussmeier. I think they've underestimated what he did last year as a first-year starter. I think, you know, they wanted to see Jaden Daniels. You're not going to see that from Garrett. I thought he played really, really well last year. Now with a year under his belt, the key is to have guys that can protect him and give him a better running game. I think the offensive line is right now the one area I would want to have a long, long look at, having the right 5 and then having 2 other guys or 3 other guys that could play, because we do know what injuries do across the offensive line. It's the most injured spots out on a football field. Your thoughts entering spring and how it'll turn out along that offensive line?
Well, my guy, 1,000% agree with you, and I do think they got it. Look, they got to be better in the interior, right? Like, I mean, let's call it like we see it there too. But Mike, there's a lot of vibes coming out right now, at least from what I hear. I mean, look, we'll be out there for practice a week from today, and the only thing I keep hearing about the offensive line is the kid out of Arkansas and Kerryus Kern. Mike, there's a video that they circulated on, you know, Faith Twitter or whatever they call it, or Snapchat. The kid's benching 225 39 times, and he's putting it on there. Now, Blake is a freshman. But Mike, I mean, when you're that physical and you're that strong, can some of these young guys that you recruited be some depth pieces that you can utilize if you need to? Now, you go and get a center, you go and get a guard, and from the portal, you would expect those guys to get in there. But Mike, I'm 1,000% with you on one massive thing. They got to be able to lock down the interior. If you go back and look at the PFF rush grades, most of the interior pressure, or where Garrett got sacked, did come from the interior. Most of those pressures came later in the season. They got to be better there, but they got to run better there too. So, Mike, my question is, I thought they were good at both tackles in most moments. My question now becomes, like, how much better can you get in that interior? And when it's 3rd and 3, you're not being predictable and having to throw the ball. And, Mike, they can't be scared to run the ball either, I think is a big deal too. But I agree with you on the offensive line. I really hope that they can get a little bit more physical. I just thought they were a little too passive in some things they were doing. And, look, I agree with you on Garrett. I think Garrett was not helped on a lot of the things that he did. He's got to clean up the turnovers, and we all understand that. But at the same time, Mike, the best thing that they can do to help him is get him an effective running game.
I agree with that, and I think Garrett would also. But you think about a guy who's really not been a full-time starter in college football, and to play the way he did, I mean, okay, everybody wants perfection. You're not going to get it. You strive for it, but you're not going to get it. Man, I thought Nussmeier did a hell of a job. In most games, they didn't have much of a running game at all.
No.
To back him
up. What games did they lose? They didn't Mike, think about this. They averaged 50 yards rushing per loss this year.
Yeah.
Think about that.
I agree.
I mean, Jaden Daniels would have that in the first quarter.
Right.
I mean, like, come on. But, you know, what's crazy about that, too, Mike, talking about the starting and first-time starter piece, he threw 12 interceptions. 10 of them came in the second half of games. Things got adjusted, and he did not know. I don't think a young guy in that position knew how to overcome the adjustments that he was seeing on the field, right? So now he gets back into a situation where he learns from that. I mean, Jaden Daniels, for crying out loud, had a double-digit interception year two, which people forget about. I love him to death. But, I mean, the second half piece of that, Mike, they adjusted on him. I think that part hurt him in a lot of games in the second half. But now he's going into that second year. The question now becomes, I mean, look, now you're getting into closer to 1,500 to 2,000 snaps here, if not a little bit more. So I do think that he's going to be a lot better there, which is going to help this team out clearly. I do think Mikey's going to have a big year, personally. I really do. I have a lot of high hopes for him.
The vibe on this baseball team, is it similar to 2 years ago? Because you think about it, and, you know, Texas A&M got a little bit of bad luck injury-wise.
They're so poised.
But how they have handled this and how Jay Johnson has handled a talented team and the bit pieces around it, because you want to try to keep everybody happy, okay? You want to try to keep everybody engaged in playing. I do think there's a lot of the same vibes. It's a different makeup, but it's similar vibes.
Yeah, I 100% agree. Danny Dickinson is a big reason behind that, too, and I think I'm going to start wearing a cross earring like I'm Ken Griffey and Danny Dickinson.
I want to see that, Blake. When that happens, just send me a text.
If you go to Omaha, I'm going to be wearing one. You can't tell my
family. There you go.
Enough.
Blake, thanks so much for joining us. Man, we got a lot more baseball before we can talk about Omaha. But, man, always great to have you on, buddy.
Thanks, guys. Y'all see y'all soon.
All righty. That was Blake Ruffino from the Are You Serious Network covering LSU football. Spring starts next Monday.
That's crazy.
For LSU. Man, it never ends. So we'll be covering that along with LSU baseball and the long ride. And like I told Coach Johnson, hey, keep me rolling till at least mid-June.
For a team with 25 new players that are playing for the first time together, Mike, that's the one word. It's what I just mentioned. They're so poised. And I mean, it goes back to, we always praise Jay, but the coaching on this team. Like, this team looks legit, and we've been talking about it for weeks now. Yes, level of competition, but the talent plays anywhere.
Yeah, and they got it. Nice to keep everybody happy.
Right.
Healthy and happy, the two H's. We'll be back with our, can't say triple option, so it'll be double coverage with Charlie Long, myself, right after this break here on the Big 870 WWL. Back here on Sports Talk on the Big 870. Mike DeTille along with Charlie Long. It's our normally triple option segment, but Geller's out there in Disney World. So
double coverage,
oh,
Mike.
Oh, yeah, so it's a double coverage today. Charlie, I'll let you go first.
Mike, I'm going with Armand Membu. I had him mocked to the Saints at pick 9 and I'm hopeful that he'll be there at pick 9, but his combine was fantastic. And I wanted to share a stat. Warren Sharp, who covers the NFL, has offensive lineman prospects that ran under a 4.9 40-yard time or better at 315 pounds and a 30-inch vert. Armon Membu and Will Campbell both did that this year, and they joined Tristan Wirfs and Trent Williams as the offensive line prospects to have done that recently. And, you know, Membu's prospects profile is just so stout. He ran a 4.91 40-yard dash, the vert 34 inches. But just watching him play, and Mike, you've brought up his age as well. He's going to be 20 years old
just
on draft
20.
Night. And he's already so solid as a prospect. You have your left tackle in Taliese Fuaga.
Yeah.
And Taliese was actually a natural right tackle. He played right tackle at Oregon State. Armon Membu is a natural right tackle. I know some people say that he could potentially kick inside, but just like Will Campbell, the top two tackle prospects in this class, in my opinion, you want to let them play tackle. You draft them to Will Campbell to play left tackle. You draft Armon Membu to play right tackle. And if they fail, then you can try kicking them inside. But I think both of them are going to be great on opposite sides of the line of scrimmage. I'm taking Armon Membu to be the Saints' right tackle of the future.
I think certainly with Will, he's going to play left tackle. I mean, all this horse hooey about arm length and all that, come on.
Especially if he goes as high as some people have him going to the Patriots at 4, they're going to let him play left tackle.
That's over-exaggerated this time of year. You brought up Trent Williams, and I told you this, we were talking before the show, that, man, Trent Williams, when he retires, he's going to be the highest paid offensive lineman in the history of the NFL. Charlie, already he's made $196.4 million. $196.4 million.
Mike,
and he's still playing.
He just got a payday. He's 37 years old right now, and he just got a payday from the 49ers. He's still playing at an elite level, one of the best tackles in football. Yeah, I don't think that's going to slow down anytime soon.
Man, and you talk about a guy that can flip a switch. He can flip it. Trent Williams, off the field, one of the nicest guys you'll ever want to meet. Very soft-spoken guy. Man, you get him out on the field, all he want to do is kick your backside. And he's sort of, I wouldn't say borderline dirty. He is dirty at times, man. But, man, can he flip the switch? The Tennessee Titans today, because we know a lot of times we get people saying, how much would it cost to build a new stadium in New Orleans, the Superdome, all the upgrades they've done to it and everything? But the Titans' new stadium, they ran the press through it today for a first look, and it's supposed to be on pace to finish in February of 2027 at a cost of $2.1
billion.
$2.1
billion. Wow. I mean, how much did SoFi cost, Mike? It wasn't that much. And I mean, it's a state-of-the-art facility. I think it was maybe one and a half. Let me look that up. But it's $2.1
billion. $2.1
billion. Jeez.
And, you know, come on. They want this. They feel as though they're going to grab a Super Bowl. Now they're trying to piece a team together that teams will want to visit to actually watch that team, not just party out in Nashville. And so, Charlie, you got that number on SoFi?
Yeah, SoFi it was actually way more than I thought. $5.5
billion. Yeah.
I thought
it was pretty expensive.
Right. I thought it was in the billions, but I didn't realize it was that much. But, yeah, these new stadiums are insane, Mike.
Yeah, that land out in Nashville is a little bit cheaper than L.A., so to speak.
That's true.
We'll be back to finish it up here on Sports Talk right after this break on the Big 870 WWL. Finishing up here in hour number two of Sports Talk on the Big 870, Charlie and I will talk to everybody Wednesday. We got tomorrow off, Mardi Gras. And so, Charlie, you Mardi Gras tomorrow?
I don't think so. Okay. You know, I'm not a early waker for Zulu or anything like that.
I
so.
Got you, Charlie.
Yeah.
But when you're going to have kids and grandkids one day, that's all going to change for
right.
you. But it's a crazy time of the year because everything merges. Think about it in a week from now. It's March Madness. Is going to clip us. Then we got spring football in the college ranks. We've got LSU SEC baseball, the NFL free agency, the draft right around the corner. It's a crazy time of the year where all these sports sort of just merge into one thing. So you get people say, oh, ask Blake more about football. Oh, ask Blake more about baseball. But it's all kind of merged in one
particular
thing. The
spring equinox. It's one of the best times of the sport calendar.
Hey, everybody be safe for Mardi Gras. Have a great time and enjoy it.